In this special episode of Centropa Stories, you will travel with Hania as she tells us about growing up in Lodz in a wealthy Orthodox family, about how she escaped from the Germans early in the war when she fled to Lviv, but how she felt compelled to go into the Warsaw ghetto to try and help her family. Hania also tried to save starving Jewish children in the ghetto before they were shot or sent off to their deaths. And then she and her husband, Edward, did their best to kill as many Germans as possible. This is the dramatic story Hania told our interviewer, Alexandra Bankowska, in 2004. In the show notes, we'll provide you with links to her entire interview in English and in Polish. Thank you for joining us for the special episode of Centropa Stories, which was made possible in part by CERV, Citizens, Equality, Rights, and Values of the European Commission's Education and Cultural Executive Agency. My name is Edward Serrata.
Chapter 1. The World I Lived In. Łódź. This is where I was born in 1915, an industrial city. My mother's side of the family, the Pilitzes, they owned textile factories. My father's side of the family, the Rottenbergs, came from a farming village in Galicia. Mostly Jews and Ukrainians lived there. Father's family owned a huge estate, which was unusual, as Jews generally were not allowed to own land then. My parents were married in Łódź, and father insisted they settle on his family's estate. But mother took one look at it and was horrified. A hand-operated water pump outside, no electricity, and being so friendly with the servants, no thank you. They went back to Łódź. Mother told me that despite being very religious, she believed women needed to work. I had three younger brothers, Zvi, then there was Mordecai, or Mitek, and we had a younger brother, Zalman, who died as a teenager just before the war. We spoke Polish and Hebrew with each other, rarely Yiddish, and spent each summer at the country estate in Galicia. I was 7 when I went to the elementary school in Lodz. Everything was in Polish or Hebrew, everything very thorough. I hated it. But somehow I got through with good marks. My father didn't think a girl needed to finish school. Mama did. But when I told her I was going to study psychology, she said, "Well, how do you make a living from that?" My maternal grandpa couldn't even understand what psychology was. He also thought teaching was really stupid. Teach other people's kids? I was 16 when I left Łódź for Warsaw in 1932. I had my first internship with intellectually disabled children. I studied with outstanding professors. But anti-Semitism was growing. You see, when Marshal Pilsudski was alive, Poland was multi-ethnic for most part. After his death, things got much worse for Jews. Fast. When Jewish students entered the university, they were beaten. But there were plenty of professors all over Poland who refused to discriminate against Jews. In my faculty, I felt no anti-Semitism. I think most Poles didn't take Adolf Hitler seriously. I read Mein Kampf, and we all thought he was a bit crazy. Who knew that he had such a mad army of Germans behind him? And I don't mean just soldiers. Chapter 2. On the Run. The German army stormed over the borders of Poland on the 1st of September, 1939. I was in Warsaw. On the 5th, A group of us left for our family estate in Galicia. We headed east on foot, but the roads were packed. People were fleeing, and the Germans were bombing. In the commotion, I got separated from my friends and went on alone. It took me 10 days to get there. But I'd not gone far enough. The Germans were still coming. A group of my cousins and me, we fled east. Then, while sitting on the side of the road near Kovel, someone came by yelling, "Bolsheviks, Bolsheviks!" And sure enough, the Soviet army was storming into eastern Poland. So the Germans and the Russians were carving up Poland between them. Again. Most Jews, at least those I knew, didn't really believe in what the Soviets started telling us about an equal society. But I knew one thing. The Germans wanted to kill me. The Soviets didn't. I was now living in Kovel under Soviet rule and worked in an orphanage. After a year, I went to live with relatives of mine in Lviv, and I worked in a home for handicapped children. Then came June 22, 1941. The Germans were marching east. The Soviets were retreating. I think it was 8 days later the Germans entered Lviv. The Ukrainians just started shooting at Poles from their windows. Then they rushed to welcome the Germans, and they covered their tanks with flowers. I refused to wear the yellow armband that Jews were told to wear. Why? I've always had a problem with authority. And while in Lviv, I met this handsome political activist, Edward Lanota. He came from the town of Stryi, was born in 1905, and his family had converted to Catholicism years ago. Edward worked as a chemist. When the war started, he went to Warsaw to join the underground. My own family moved from the Łódź ghetto to the Warsaw ghetto. I didn't want to go there, of course, but I had to try to help my parents. In Warsaw, a friend took me to a Polish policeman at the entrance of the ghetto. We offered him money, but he waved it away. I stepped into hell. Chapter 3. Life in Hell. Pitch black on the streets, people lying there, sitting there, stretching out their hands to you. Imagine this. A ghetto with tens upon tens of thousands of people and a great many of them starving to death before your eyes. I found the address where my parents were supposed to be. A tiny little woman answered the door. I had no idea who she was until she said, "Khania," and I realized it was my mother. She asked me, "Why didn't you escape east with the Russians?" I got a job, but what a job, in an orphanage in the ghetto. We were taking children off the streets. We took them in, washed them. Some of them died right away. Others clung to life. A cousin told me about the gas vans. The Jews were being put in them and murdered. That is why I knew, on July the 22nd, 1942, when the Germans surrounded the ghetto and the deportations began, I knew it would be certain death. I ran to my parents. There was soup on the table. It was still warm. Family pictures were scattered on the floor. But they were gone. Taken away. Jews were being rounded up everywhere. I ran back to the orphanage, which was just next to the ghetto wall. I told my orphans, "If you can, run." A few of them got away, but I don't know how far they got. As for the ones who couldn't move, I think the Germans just shot them right there. I managed somehow to get away. By this time, I was getting messages from Poles and Jews in hiding outside the ghetto. They said, "Get out, Chania. Get out. Tell everyone it's to the death." They had been told by railroad workers that the trains from the ghetto left horribly overcrowded and came back entirely empty. That could only mean one thing. I rushed to my friend Chania Rabinowitz, and she told me she was going to Umschlagplatz, the collection point. I begged her not to go, but she wouldn't listen. Another one gone. I saw a group of young men wearing their rucksacks heading towards Umschlagplatz. I pleaded with them not to go there, but they just yelled at me and kept going. They were so frightened, so desperate. They wanted to believe the Germans when they said they were being taken to work. A friend who was in the Polish underground came to me and said, "Here you are, 200 zloty. Tomorrow morning at 5 a.m., a group of Jews is leaving the ghetto to go to work. You need to tag along with them and give the German at the gate who lets them pass this 200 zloty. Either he'll let you go or he'll shoot you." That night, I found my two brothers, Mitek and Svi. They told me, "When you get out, Chania, if you survive and have the chance, try to get us out too." That was the last I saw of them. The next day, August the 14th, 1942, at 5 a.m, I made my way to the entrance of the ghetto. I gave the German at the gate the money and walked very slowly because I thought that if he wanted to shoot me, let him shoot. But he didn't even look round. Chapter 4. With the Underground. When Edward came to Warsaw, he made bombs. He helped blow up trains heading for the front. But Edward was known to the Gestapo. They sent him word that they had his son from his first marriage. They said they would release him if Edward turned himself in. Edward knew they were lying, but it was his son. What choice did he have? So Edward turned himself in. Just like we thought, they murdered his son and tortured him. They sent him to Medenek, but he escaped from the train. Edward always carried a gun after that. He said that he would shoot them, and then himself. He said he'd never be taken alive. Before the end of 1942, Edward and I married, but we were apart much more than we were together. I met Krisha Stalinska. We got our false papers together, the papers that would keep me alive. Krisha wasn't Jewish. She became my best friend. We printed an underground newspaper and pretended to be earning money from ironing. We fought side by side in the forest around Warsaw until I was wounded. Then came the destruction of the Warsaw ghetto. It was April 19th, 1943. The Germans were clearing out the last Jews in the ghetto, and Jewish men and women decided to fight. And they did. But the Germans overwhelmed them. They destroyed everything, and I could see it from outside the ghetto. Soon after, Krishna and I were carrying a sack full of weapons. The Germans ran after us. I shot one of them. Krisha was shooting too, but they caught her. I got away. She did not. I changed flats almost constantly. Weeks turned into months. August 1944, I heard that the second Warsaw uprising had broken out, so my friends and I headed to the old town. We burst into Market Square and found a procession of people with red and white flags. They were singing patriotic songs. We stood bewitched. Suddenly, freedom had come. It was incredible. Edward dashed out of a cafe, and from then on, he and I were together. Right at the start of the uprising, we knew there won't be victory here, only defeat. But it didn't occur to us not to fight. To fight the Germans was happiness. It was suddenly freedom, after so many years. But the old town was being completely destroyed by the Germans. They bombarded it terribly. Houses collapsed, people in them killed. There was no escape. On August the 26th, Edward and I were in the same house. He was just on the floor below me, and I was standing near the courtyard. I was printing the newspaper we made for our fighters. And suddenly, a bomb with a time delay crashed into the house. The last thing I heard was Edward calling, "Hania!" I said, "I'm here!" And someone shoved me out onto the street through a hole in the wall. Then came the explosion. I lost consciousness. Only later did they tell me that Edward had died. I didn't know it then, but 8 months later, I was going to have our baby. To escape the dying city, which Germans were demolishing house by house, we crawled through the sewers with rats all around us and Germans throwing grenades through the manholes. We emerged in a city square. A friend let us wash and change clothes. Then we went on the run. We reached the village of Lasky and knocked on the door of a home for the blind. It was run by nuns. They took us in, fed us, cared for us, and put us in touch with a ferryman so that we could cross the Vistula. We kept running. Finally, we made our way to Yublin. The Soviet army was there and was heading west. The war had ended for me. In May 1945, I gave birth to Malgosia. A new chapter in my life had begun. Chapter 5, Starting Over. In those first years after the war, hundreds of thousands of Jews left Poland. There were even pogroms against them by Poles, not Germans. But I didn't feel the need to leave, because when I needed help most, there was almost always a Pole who reached out to help me, to save me, strangers and friends, nuns and communists. I worked for a daily newspaper in Łódź. Then I brought my baby with me to Warsaw, where I edited a magazine. The city was totally razed, almost unrecognizable. We lived, ate, slept in one room, and I worked right there on a typewriter. And in those first years after the war, I joined the Polish United Workers' Party. In 1948, I launched a woman's weekly and I became editor-in-chief. I cannot tell you how important this magazine was back then. It had over 2 million subscribers, but everyone passed it along to their family and friends. That means, literally, almost every woman in Poland had read our magazine. And I believe it was the most popular women's magazine in all of Europe. I commissioned articles not just on cooking, but on modern childcare and, if you can believe it, sex education. In the early 50s, it was revolutionary. I stayed there until 1959. At the University of Warsaw, I taught a child psychology class and conducted research in kindergartens. I also worked in a psychology clinic and moved to another magazine, Knowledge and Life, as the assistant editor-in-chief. I worked there until I retired in 1975. But I carried on working in the clinic well into the 2000s and stayed with a few patients even after that. As for me and the Polish United Workers' Party, I became more and more disillusioned. But in 1968, when the Gomulka regime expelled tens of thousands of Jews from Poland, I'd had enough, even though I myself wasn't affected. I turned in my party card. I'm not sure, but maybe my daughter learned to be a rebel from me. She was arrested for taking part in the riots at the University of Warsaw in 1968. After that, she was involved in the Solidarity movement. I didn't bring my daughter up religiously because I am a non-believer, but I brought her up to be aware that she is Jewish and that that is something good, something to be proud of. My grandsons, Piotr and Jan, whose father is a Pole, consider themselves Jewish. Today, in our family, we always celebrate Pesach, which of course is Jewish, and we celebrate Christmas, which of course isn't. The happiest festival for us is Pesach, and the traditional dinner you hold on the first two nights. It's called the Seder. My grandsons and their friends come round. We sit down and read the Haggadah, which tells of the Exodus from Egypt. And, as a tradition, we put a cup of wine on the table and open the door for the prophet Elijah to come in. When the boys were small, they really believed that Elijah had come because the cup of wine was empty. I had something to do with that. More than a dozen family members come to these dinners. I love it. And it reminds me of those seders we had all those years ago, back in Łódź, back before the world turned dark.
That was the actor Sarah Kesselman, reading excerpts from Centropa's interview with Hania Linota. Hania was born in 1915 in Łódź. She died 89 years later in Warsaw. Like every Polish Jew who survived the Holocaust, she had lived through hell. No one else in her family did.